How long must our souls reside in these fragile birds?
Until a creature crawls up upon this small rock, until the desire to live and breathe drives them from the emptiness of boundless dark sea into the confines of life.
When the timeless are lured by the beauty of the finite.
Only then can the souls who wander the universe on the wings of birds join with them and merge the infinite with the finite.
Life is an island in a vast, dark ocean.
Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wife. I'm Hardy Wife. Join me now, won't you, for the story of Bermuda. We'll cross a huge, vast ocean together. And then, if we're lucky, we might bump into a tiny little island. And there, we can rest for a while and enjoy one another. Man, it's frightening to be stranded on an island, alone, at night. There's so many... What was that? Maybe I'm not alone. That sounded like somebody in pain or something, or... What the heck? Oh, good Lord. It's like there's devils or ghosts here. What kind of place is this? I can't see anything. I think my imagination is running away with me. Oh, no. Take pity on me, spirits. Take pity on me. Alone here on this island in the middle of nothing.
Hey, Butch, was there a first tourist, like there was a first woman or a first national bank?
Yeah, the Rhyming Divine.
Oh, cool name.
He went to Bermuda and liked it and stayed. He's famous for that.
It's a hard place to leave because you get possessed by ghost birds.
Yep.
This is the island nobody wanted. Before Bermuda's first lighthouse, the island was the site of many shipwrecks. Some say the island itself lured the vessels into the grip of its jagged rocky jaws, crushing them and stranding their crews on its wild terrain, where the ghosts of the dead, riding in the bodies of small albatross-like birds, kahals, would possess the sailors who then would be compelled to live out their lives on the rock they called the Island of Devils. The Spaniard Juan de Bermudez officially discovered the island in 1505, but he recognized the powerful spiritual and supernatural forces at work on the island and refused to claim it for Spain. In 1609, the English ship Sea Venture wrecked on the island. The crew stayed a few weeks before rebuilding their ships and heading on to feed the doomed Jamestown settlers. But once they left, they vowed never to come back. And return they did, to settle the island, taking jobs as shipbuilders and to act as the earthly home for the ghosts of the sky. But the sailors were not alone. When Bermudez made his hasty retreat from the island, he left behind wild hogs who flourished. Over the years, the population reproduced and increased and became food for future stranded mariners, as well as acting as predators for and decimating the population of kahals that lived on the island, the ghost birds, named after the eerie sound of their call, for they are vessels of the ancient spirits who long to dwell amongst the living. Now, in modern times, things are a little different. It turns out that Bermuda's rocky surroundings create a beautiful lagoon in the middle of the vast sea, a small rocky island paradise in the vast emptiness, an island where creatures live out their lives in an improbable tiny place, and souls all over are drawn to its mystery and magic. And those seekers of paradise we call tourists. But who was the first tourist? In 1663, Bermuda had its first tourist, Christian minister Sir Michael Wigglesworth, known as the Rhyming Divine. When the good pastor visited Bermuda, he expected to die there of his many maladies, but after a few days found the water and air to be restorative and stayed, lured by the beauty of life and compelled by the lonely souls of the ghost birds, hungry to live in the world. Although the Rhyming Divine was the first tourist, he wasn't the last. Mark Twain, the American writer, visited the islands several times, beginning in 1867. "I first visited the island in 1867. After that, he made subsequent visits and praised what he called... Do you want to tell it? Sorry, because I'll let you tell it. Go ahead. Bermuda welcomes you with open arms, or rather, open rocky jaws that the ship squeezes through in an impossible manner, like threading a limestone needle with a wooden thread. The people are polite and reasonable, and the weather is nice, like a child when it wants a treat, or a dog after it's relieved itself on your finest rug. The smells are what I imagine paradise smells like after a good cleaning. And the temperature is always a constant, pleasant temperature, about the same temperature as a well-sat-upon seat cushion or a potato that's cooked, but that's let sit for a while. A room-temperature potato. I imagine why so many people are drawn here is because the birds that fly over, the cahow, the Bermuda version of an albatross, compel those of us who seek paradise to come here so that the souls of the ancients that they carry can possess humans to show them that to be alive at all is paradise. To exist for even a brief time on a small rock in a vast ocean is the most incredible miracle of all."
Excuse me, mister, mister.
Yes?
I would like to buy a ticket to Bermuda.
Are you going to Bermuda?
I'd like to.
Would you go there if you could, now?
Yeah, that's what I want to do, get a ticket.
If you go there, plan on staying.
Oh. Well, I don't know.
Apparently you'll like it, because that's the way in Bermuda.
All right.
Oh, my friend! This is the story of Bermuda. It is ancient times. In the Atlantic Ocean, 650 miles due east of Fripp Island, South Carolina, the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean, there is a volcano, a crack in the ocean floor, and up from that crack spews lava. Not the soap with pumice in it. My grandfather used to use that. There was a soap called Lava, had pumice in it, it's all rough and everything. And if he was working on a car, had grease on his hands, say, "Marge, bring me the lava." She said, "You want to wash your hands in hot magma?" He said, "No, I want the lava soap, has pumice in it, helps cut the grease off my hands. If I were to wash my hands in actual lava, it would singe all the flesh off of them, and I would be left with just the skeletal
remains of bony hands like that, and it might look kind of interesting, kind of cool, but I have this feeling that it's the skin and the sinews that are keeping the bones together, that my hands would not stay together intact as skeletal hands the way they are on Halloween decorations. You see, I think it's the packaging that is keeping the bones intact. So just bring me the regular soap, and I'm going to wash this grease off my hands. And that is partially how Bermuda began. They put lots of things in soap now. I had soap the other day, had oatmeal in it, had big chunks of oatmeal. And you wash your chest, and the little tiny pieces of oatmeal go all in your chest hair and everything. And you think, hey, that's awesome. I wonder if there's different kind of breakfast cereal. So I took some Lucky Charms, and I just started mushing them into my body like that. And I said, I'm going to pretend it's a bath bomb. So the lava, again, not the soap, rose from the bottom of the ocean floor down there in the Atlantic, where Atlantis is supposed to be, but it's also missing from there. Isn't that funny? The lost continent of Atlantis, not only did it go missing years ago, still missing. People think they find it all the time. They go, oh, I found a rock. It looks like from Atlantis. I don't know. It's probably an ordinary rock. Oh, whatever. One time, somebody went at the bottom of the ocean, found a sign that said Atlantis, 50 kilometers. But I don't think that's good enough proof. Out of the ocean floor rose this lava, and it formed a column. Oh, yes, a big column from the ocean floor. And that column rose up and almost reached the surface of the water, but not quite. But it was close enough that light could come in and penetrate and reach the top of that great column. And on top of that great column, coral began to form. And the coral grew, and coral would die, and new coral would grow until it piled up over time. It's like if you were resting on the bones of your ancestors, every time your grandpa died, you'd go living on top of them. Until you were on top of a pile of bones, that's the way coral is, and the bones got high enough, the coral remains got high enough that they started to rise out of the water, and an island formed. An island, a tiny island, about 22 miles long and 2.5 miles wide, in almost the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. And that island sat there. Rocky, and without many mammals on it, any mammals on it, only birds. Mammals couldn't get to it because at that time, sheep did not know how to operate boats and things like that. Say, well, the only wild muskrats on it or something. No, because a lot of small mammals hadn't discovered how to be a boatwright. You see what I'm saying? So they didn't know how to get there. And you could say, well, maybe one of them gets stuck on a piece of wood or something, float out there. Yeah, but then they're alone. How are they going to reproduce? But birds reach there. So birds flock to the island, and there you have a rocky island. And the birds would poo out seeds, all sorts of seeds. I don't know what types. Whatever's there now, birds flying by say, I'm going to poo out some cedar trees. I don't know how exactly that works. But it happened. Perhaps the tides also carry things. You know, they carry things on. Now they carry mostly plastic and waste. But I think they used to carry life to these remote islands. And so the trees grew and the birds flew on this tiny rocky island. And many, many years passed. And then there was a mammal that figured out how to make boats. And that mammal was called Homo sapiens. And they made boats, and as big as that ocean was. Now, the Atlantic Ocean is vast, and this island is 22 miles long, and yet they still kept bumping into it. Isn't that amazing? It's like when you get up in the middle of the night, and you can have a clear path to the bathroom in the dark, but you bark your shin on a small table or something, and you think, gosh, with all the space out here in the Atlantic Ocean that is my bedroom floor, how can it be that I have barked my shin on the Somers Islands? And so ships would wreck there, and people would get stranded there and everything. And one day, a fella named Juan de Bermudez bumped into the island. Now, what a coincidence, because he happened to have the same last name as the island. Isn't that amazing? It's like if I discovered some place called White Island. So how'd that happen? I don't know. I guess it's a coincidence. So Juan de Bermudez went there, but he never claimed it for Spain because he thought, why? It's just a rock in the middle of the ocean. Some more years went by. And then some British people bumped into it, and they were like, we have very low standards for land. We're just going to take it. And we take anything, whether we need it or not. That's the way colonialism works. You always say, I'm going to take it. Is there anything here of value? Not really. I'm going to take it anyway, and we'll see. I will strip the land of its resources and then figure out. So they came, and they eventually settled there. And the island, they named after the fellow who didn't want it. See, I don't understand that either. But they called the island Bermuda. And to this day, it's still called Bermuda. Skipping, I just came back from there. So that is why I feel that I can tell you the history of this small island, because I visited it. And that's all you really need to do. Gosh, that doesn't sound like enough. Hardy, how can you tell me the history of a place if you've only been there a little? Well, I make things up largely. Also, I'm convinced it's a metaphor. I just don't know for what. So I'm going to treat it like it is one, without knowing, and say that somehow, bumping into a small island, a small rock in the middle of a vast ocean seems very familiar to me. I think it's what happened when I was born. Before I was born, I lived nowhere. I drifted in a dark ocean. And only when I washed up on this rock could I live my life. And then eventually, I will return to the ocean. I don't know how that's going to do. Are you going to scatter my ashes? I would prefer, let's stretch it out. If I should die, and I think I might because I've been into the future and there's some hints like my gravestone. I'm thinking that should you want to ashify me, what's it called? Cremate me. Ashify is not the word. Cremate me. And then you say I'm going to scatter your ashes. Let's stretch it out over time. I'm thinking just one ash at a time, every couple days, right? Go out and flick an ash like it's a cigarette and then... Say, I'm gonna save my Hardy over time. I'm going to ration Hardy, because that way I can flick Hardy into the ocean for the rest of my life or something, right? I was going to be mummified, but I thought, what a waste to be mummified just so you can scare graduate students. I don't want to do that. So maybe just flick me into the ocean like I'm an island. Oh, the history of Bermuda. When Juan left, he also left some pigs. Because I guess he had pigs on the ship, because the crews back in the day used to be made up of both men and pigs. The pigs would do most of the work, and the men would sit around and say, I'm going to wait till that pig works itself to death, and then I'm going to eat it. And then that's the way they would work. So the pigs would be up there rigging the sails. Picture now the pig in like a Captain Crunch hat. Captain hat. This was true. And so they left some of the pigs behind, because what happens is, so I don't know if you've been on a cruise, but they'll stop on an island and say, oh, you have so many minutes to go out and buy straw hats, to buy shirts with pictures of liquor bottles on them. And then you need to be back at the ship because we're going to leave. And inevitably, there's a couple that doesn't remember that and they miss the ship. And this happened to the pigs. They were out there. They were enjoying themselves in the water. They were eating fish sandwiches. And they were shopping. They were doing a lot of shopping because there's duty-free perfume. And they're not used to that because their perfume has duty in it. So they were very excited. And they forgot to go back to the ship. So they remained there and they multiplied. And so then subsequently, when people hit the island, they went, this is great. And for a while, they called it Bacon Island. Say, oh, this is free food. But there was another problem. On this island was also these birds, like a small albatross bird called a petrel, a Bermuda petrel. And they make their nests in the ground, which I've got to recommend. If you're a bird and you're listening, that's not a great idea. I'm telling you, birds, the whole wing thing, you can make it up in the tree. You don't have to be on the ground anymore. You're not a chicken. So what happened is that these birds, their population was decimated. And it's interesting, too, because the early sailors would hear the cries of these birds. Cahows. And that's the sound of cahow. And they thought it was a ghost or a tortured spirit. Say, let's get out of here. I can't make the little tiny bongo sound from the cartoons that someone running without having any traction is the same sound as a very high-pitched bongo. And they would do that and would take off. But it was just the birds. Well, eventually the pigs ate the birds. Isn't that the way it always is? Isn't that the way it always is? That seems like George Orwell warned us. If you bring pigs to Bermuda, they're going to eat your sacred bird. Now, we have discovered this bird population is not completely decimated, and some of them survived for 300 years. And now they're trying to revive the population of these special birds. And I believe some of them still live to this day. The pigs? Not so much. Please keep your arms and your legs inside the boat at all times. Thank you very much. If I was on Bermuda, I'd be giving tours. What would you give a tour of? Well, I tell you, owing to the interesting geology of this place, Bermuda is riddled with caves, caverns, strange caverns filled with stalagmites and stalactites. Stalagmites are the ones that are kind of cones that point up from the ground. Stalactites point down from the ground. They're what happens when the limestone, you know, erodes like that from the natural acid in the water, and that it creates these wonderful columns called stalactites and stalagmites. And then there's the ones that come in from the side called stalagrites. That is not true. So it'd be wonderful, though. But it's not the way gravity works. But I'd explore these caverns. Oh, they're mysterious. Couldn't you imagine being the first person to go down in there with a torch and say, what is this magical place? Do demons live here? Do angels live here? Do ogres live here? Who lives here? Nobody. Nobody really lives in that cave in the cold, clear, crystal waters. What a beautiful place. And I'd give tours down there, and I'd say, watch your step. This is stalagmite. This is stalactite. That's water. This is a cave. Blah, blah, blah. Geology. Thank you for coming. Watch your step. And that's what I would do, because who doesn't want to explore something, especially the inside of an island? We all reside on top of a thing. I wonder what's under us. Not a volcano. See, the volcano moved on. The volcano, or malcano, as I almost called it. And I won't explore that. We understand what a malcano is if you've been shopping when it's very, very busy. The volcano moved on, so all is left is this island. Almost in the middle of nowhere. How'd we get there? How'd we get to Earth? How'd we get to life? Like I said, I was minding my business in the void. I don't remember asking to be born. I must have, though. I'm here, right? And how long will I be here? I don't know. And what do we do on this island? Oh, I tell you one thing we can do. You and I should visit. Let's visit together. Do you want to go to the beach? People like to go to the beach. Why? Because the beach is the edge of the island. The beach is the edge of the island. It is where the infinite meets the finite. It is where you can look out into the almost the near abyss, because you see nothing, right? As far as you can see. Just ocean, nothing around. If I was out there, I may perish. It is only here that I am safe. This small, fragile thing that contains everything I need for life, and yet the hostility that surrounds it, the indifferent ocean, where I would not survive. And the birds fly over, the birds immune to it almost, soaring above the clouds, and us stuck here amid the rocks. Oh, the history of Bermuda by Hardy White. Once upon a time, you and I landed on an island. And you said, I don't mean rude, is that Mark Twain? A lot of time when I take the time machine, I will go to Bermuda during a certain period and I will kind of stalk Mark Twain. He's there on vacation. And until you've seen Mark Twain in a bathing suit... This is one thing Hal Holbrook has never been able to reproduce. It's just,
It's like a more relaxed Mark Twain. I don't even know. He's like, call me Sam. I don't want to think about writing. I don't want to think about my typewriter company investment. I don't want to think about anything. I just want to go to the island. I'm thinking about having a swizzle. I'm thinking about having some Bermuda fish chowder. And I'm just going to relax and enjoy myself. I'm going to get in a horse and buggy. And I'm going to ride around in it. And everybody's going to be looking at me and say, is that Mark Twain? Not today, folks. Today, I'm just Sam Clemens, tooling around in a horse and buggy, relaxing on this island, thinking, how did I get here? But looking up to the clear blue sky and looking down at the green, blue, clear waters, like a magical lagoon, like paradise. Paradise. That's where we are, if we want it, but only for a while. Oh, it's so temporary. Will Bermuda endure, or will the earth erase it the way it has so many lands and so many islands? Will the sea swallow it, or will it remain? Oh, I don't know, but for now, let's just sit here, and I was going to get you a drink. You sit here, find another beach chair. What I'm going to do is I'm going to head back up to the poolside bar, and I'm going to get us a couple drinks, and I'm going to be a minute because I need to wash all the sand off my feet because I can't stand that feeling. It doesn't matter when my feet are in the sand, I'm fine. When I'm away from the sand suddenly becomes inappropriate. It's funny. When your feet and your toes are in the sand at the beach, it feels right, but when that sand is in your shoe and you're in the office, it doesn't feel right. It's context. That's called context. Somebody comes up to say, man, I got all the sand in my shoe. You know what I say to them? I look them right in the eye and I say, context. That's context. Because in one sense, you're walking on the beach. You're walking on the beach while you're at work. And in the other sense, you got sand in your shoes. And even on your beat, you could do the same thing on the beach. I'm on the beach. But really, it's like I got sand not only in my shoes, but in my life. There's sand in my life. I can't enjoy it, you say. You say there's things marring my vacation. I'm sitting here on the beach, but there's somebody next to me talking loudly. I am looking out over the beautiful lagoon. The water is supernaturally clear. The sky is so blue. The breeze is cool. And the sun is warm, and the sound of the waves sounds like my mother's womb. And the people next to me are saying, well, we go to lunch now, then that it's early now, we're going to have to get an early dinner.
Well, if we get it wouldn't be bad getting an early dinner, then we could take the cocktail cruise.
I'm not taking the cocktail cruise. It's $160.
Now, I gotta tell you something. I believe that that is part of paradise. You don't see that in the Bible. See, Adam and Eve say, oh, this is paradise, there's free fruit, and there's a snake exhibit and everything. But what you don't hear is there's other people there. The Bible doesn't mention them because it just assumes you would realize there'd be other folks there, right? And those folks were loud and complaining and everything like that. But look, that just comes with the territory. There's no pure paradise. This place is rocky. These rocks can destroy ships, but they can also protect us from the waves. These rocks end dreams. These rocks kill commerce. These rocks create islands. These rocks create safety. So, you know, they gotta be there. What about these loud complaining people? Oh, they're too. I love you. I love you all. We are tourists here. We're all wondering what life is about. We're all asking questions. We all are tourists. Some of us are the rhyming divine. And when we see these things, we're inspired to make poetry of them. And other tourists complain and leave. So you're either the Ryman Divine or you're Juan de Bermudez. But it's the same island. It's all about your perspective. Oh, tourists. We're here looking around. Some of us are curious. Some of us want to sign up for tours. So I got to sign up for the tour now because I know it gets very busy. But I'm interested. I'm interested how this building got here. Tell me about that building. Well, that building is actually, it's a public restroom. Oh, I thought it was, that's all right. I mean, that's a part of life, right? Yes. And it's a nice public restroom. Indeed. I was looking for some old churches or something. All right, we have those. Bermuda has the oldest church in the Western Hemisphere. Is that right? Yes. Let me see it. Okay, just looks like a church. Didn't say it was interesting. Just say it was the oldest. I have relatives like that. Say, oh, Uncle, what's his name, is our oldest uncle. Is he the most interesting uncle? Not necessarily. I'd like to speak to the most interesting uncle. All right, then get a Ouija board, because he's dead. Oh, all right. Well, I'll tell you what. That's why we have to do everything we can. Let's not spend any time resting. Let's go around and see as much as we can. Oh, Hardy. Don't do that. Go on a tour sometimes, but it's okay to just stare at the ocean. You don't have to be learning all the time. Sometimes you can just stare out there in quiet and let the mystery wash over you. And you don't have to unravel the mystery. You can just experience it. I'm just going to experience this ocean. I'm not going to try to attach words to it, because when I do, I keep saying the same thing. Vast, 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 large, vast, mysterious, dark, strange, scary. And yet when I'm in its presence, it feels intimate, as if I've known the ocean all my life. And although it can kill me, I feel that it loves me, that it would kill me but never let me go, that it would embrace me. It just needs to take me apart. Like a child with a favorite toy. You give a toy to a child, and you come back and say, you took it all apart! That was a perfectly good, Optimus Prime or whatever. You ripped it all apart. But see, that's what gave the child joy, is taking it apart. Looking at it, examining it. So not everything's going to stay intact. Oh, I love being on an island with you. It's fun, can't get away from each other, but we can take little breaks from one another. That's a good thing. We can go in our little rooms. We can go in our little rental cottages. And there we can look at our brochures and think about what we're going to do tomorrow, even though tomorrow may never come. I love being on an island with you, my friends. Oh, my gosh. Oh, and listen, I want you to wear whatever you want. I want you to wear whatever. You're on vacation. This is an island. Take your shoes off. Come on, be comfortable. You think, should I wear those short pants? Wear the short pants. That's why people wore them. Because when there's soldiers and everything came to the island, because the English like to send soldiers to a place, even if there's no conflict, just to create one. And so say, oh, it's so hot with these long wool pants. Do you mind if we wear hot pants? And they said, I'll tell you what, let's compromise. And instead of hot pants, let's do like 2 inches above the knee shorts. And the soldiers, okay, that's still short enough to make other people uncomfortable. And it's fine, it makes us comfortable. So that's where the Bermuda short came from. And then, but then you got all this leg. And the calf, the lower leg, to Victorian England was very offensive. They would, if they would see you in public, they would cut them off. They would cut off your leg. Say, oh, it was a bare leg, cut it off. And even the furniture, you'll notice the furniture from that era is the legs on the furniture are covered. This is no joke. That's how offensive the bare leg is to the British people. And they don't want to see it. They don't want to see feet or legs or anything, please. So that's where the knee sock came in. And say, okay, you can wear the short pants to cool off, but you're going to have to wear a hot hosiery and draw that up to your knee, absolutely defeating the purpose of the shorts. But there's your old kneecap poking out there. That's fine. It's a little, it's not titillating or anything. It's that one part of the human body you go, ugh, what is that all about? Yes, the knee.
We've got to see where it bends.
And that's the short, so wear whatever you want. Oh, just be comfortable. You want to wear a funny hat? That's good. You want to wear big sunglasses? Let them smear on some of that lotion. Don't use the old stuff. You know, back in the day, they put oil on, tanning oil. Not only does it not have any protection against the sun, it actually cooks your skin. So I'm just going to put some, it's what you do to, like, if you eat meat, and somebody said, I'm going to prepare a turkey. You rub Hawaiian Tropic all over the turkey. We do. I make it, I don't need turkey, I'm kidding. But let's just, for the sake of this joke, let's get it over with. I rub the Hawaiian Tropic on the turkey, and it tans up real good, and then it has a sort of, you know, tropical feel. I call it Hawaiian turkey. And it also, I don't know if it's edible. That's the thing. But that's what people do to their skin. So I'm going to broil up like that. They used to. What was the slogan? Band de Soleil for the Saint-Tropez turn. That was turn. The ships are coming in. Turn. And the ships pull up to the harbor there in Hamilton, Bermuda. And all the tourists get off. And they say, I would like some duty-free liquor and all that. And they go in there. I would like to see some local natives do local things. And so that's what they do. And they get off the cruise ships and they explore. And say, I've never been on an island. Where I'm from, we are not surrounded by the infinite. I never see it. So it's beautiful to be able to stand on something with a view of the infinite. It's like looking at the stars all the time. It's like looking out into the universe constantly and understanding, gosh, this planet is tiny. How could anything bump into it? It's in an ocean of space. The Earth is Bermuda. We're all living on Bermuda. It's a rock in the middle of nowhere. We don't even know how we got here. Maybe some cosmic bird pooped us out. Like we're a cedar nut. That's this thing. All right, well, I don't know how things are made, but that was my understanding, that the birds would bring things in their beaks. My python says coconuts and all, but I don't know if that's true. But they'd bring things and then drop it, and then the thing would grow. Maybe that's how the Earth formed. Maybe some cosmic bird put us here. I do not know. I'm pretty sure that's not true. But I tell you, in poetry it all is. In poetry it's all true. And it rings true, doesn't it? I can say something absurd and you go, gosh, I know that is not logical, but that does sound true. That is my experience, Hardy. That's how I feel when I go to Bermuda. That's how I feel when I bump into a rocky island. What else can we do here, my friend? Gosh, there's so much. I don't know. Bermuda shorts, have I discussed that? Yes, yes, you have. How about the onion? The onion? Yes, they grow onions. Bermuda onions. And then that's what they call themselves. Or used to. I'm an onion, are you? Yes. Why? Because you like many layers? What now? Because the onion has many layers? You have many layers? No. Well, why do you call? Because we grow them here, man. Okay. We grow onions here. Okay, I hear you. There's room to farm. Okay, even though it's small. All right, my bad. And the onion endures, doesn't it? It keeps going. Yes. That's us. That's all of us. We keep going. And can you extend that? What do you mean? The onion, how else are we like onions? Are we aromatic? No. Are we, I don't know, man. Can you dry us out or something? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Move on. There's more to see on the island. There's more to see here. Oh, you know who lived on Bermuda? That Michael Douglas. Michael Douglas, the actor. Oh, yes. His mother was a Bermudian. Her family went back generations to the 1600s. Can you believe that? Michael Douglas still has a house there, and it's for sale if you're interested. And his family's land. He has land there. Used to be a hotel. That's also for sale.
So I believe the land is 14 million, and I think his home is around 8, or it might even be less. I think it's a bargain. So I was thinking this. I did the math, and between us, I think we have, let's see, how many listeners do I have? Gosh, I can go through them all. Let's see. Dale and Anna and, let's see, Cosmic. And, well, I don't want to go through all of you. I know you're out there. But let's say we all put in $1. I don't think that's going to work out. I think we actually have to all put in $500,000 or 750,000. I'll do the math more before I approach you. I should have done my homework before I approached you about this, but I thought we could buy it and have a kind of a resort, make like a WFMU resort where we can all go there, maybe even do the marathon there. And then people would also say, well, if you had $14 million to buy a resort, why are you having the marathon? Just use that for the radio station. Oh, gosh, I feel stupid. This is why I'm not in accounting or anything. I don't know how to allocate my resources. I don't know how to prioritize things. I don't. I keep thinking that it's most important to be together. That's all I want to do, is share my time here with you. To maximize the joy and minimize the pain. Oh, there is pain. I do not forget that for every wild hog that enjoys a meal, that's one seabird, one burrow nesting seabird that doesn't. So some people win, some people lose. There is pain, there is hardship. And then between that, there is beauty and joy. And I want to be with you for both, because they come so quickly that if you're just there for the joy or you're just there for the hardship, you're going to probably miss the other thing. Stay the whole time. Let's stay together. Let's stay friends. Let's try. Let's not let other things divide us, you and I. I'm not going to let people I don't know tell me something about you. You tell me something about you. I'm going to stay your friend. I'm not going to be poisoned by some sound, some ghostly sounds. It's probably just a bird making a call, but I think it's some kind of ghost telling me, run, run from these people. Run from this place. It is haunted. The spirits are trying to get at you. No, no, I'm going to be brave. Those sounds are just the sounds of other creatures. I'm not leaving your side. I know that this is a dark island. Together we can do this. Alone, it's frightening. Oh, no, I'm not going to leave your side because of some call from something I cannot see. You and I together. That's where the joy is going to come from. I'm going to hold you when you cry. And I don't care if those tears are joy or pain. You still need to be held. When you cry for joy, you need to be held. When you cry for pain. And let's hold each other. I don't care. I'm not good at anything. Oh, no. When I was a young man, I had a profound dream, and at the time I didn't think it was a profound dream because I didn't know about the word profound, nor did I know about the word profundity, which I still am not sure that's a word, but I had no idea that this dream might have some kind of significance, and I was at the bottom of the ocean. I found myself there, and it was telling me, some voice in my head, that I was at the bottom of Bermuda, at the bottom of the ocean. And I looked up to see a giant sea turtle speaking to me. And the cartoons have probably poisoned you, and you think that sea turtles, sound something like this. But they don't. They have booming voices. I'm a sea turtle. And even though I'm ancient and I'm over 100 years old, my voice is powerful and booming. Just like Miss Lillian Cox, my old neighbor in Tallahassee, at 105 or something, had a booming, strong voice. Nothing had subdued that. And this sea turtle said to me, here, I give you a brother assembled by your uncles out of this box of robot parts. And I realized then that the turtle was telling me that everyone is my brother, and that the ancients have made you all so that we can have a family, and that our time on this tiny island is finite, and only with each other, only with each other can we endure, and it has poisoned our thoughts that we can do this alone, that others are out to get us, and I'm telling you, you are being driven away from your family. You are being driven away from your inheritance as a human being, as a loving human being, to embrace your community. Oh, yes, we are all meant to be siblings. We are all family. The tortoises, the seabirds, the people. We can all live here. And all we have to do is open our eyes and realize where we are. All we have to do is look at this island as the miracle that it is risen out of the sea, maybe temporarily, and that our time on it is only temporary. Oh, I'll tell you what, it gives me shivers. It's a combination of joy and fear. But when you're with me, the fear recedes to the background, doesn't it? It's just like the fear is like a cuticle, and you have a little device say, ah, push that cuticle back. Cuticle doesn't disappear. Push that cuticle back off my nail, my beautiful nail. Now I want, what do you want me to do? Now I want you to paint my nail, paint a flower on it or something. All right. No, I'll tell you what, don't, because I got a lot of work to do. I'm going to do a lot of digging. It's going to be a waste. No, it won't be a waste, because for a little while you'll have a little flower on your fingernail. All right, go ahead then. Do it. I know I'm going to fall. I fall asleep when anything does, touches me in any way. I massage my head out cold. So touch my hand. I shake hands with people, and it's just, it's too much relaxing stimulus, and I fall asleep. But that's all right. Oh, I love it because I crave the human touch. And at that point, when you touch me, it releases all my fear and I suddenly feel safe. I suddenly feel like I'm supposed to be here. That's why I sleep. Not because I'm bored. Doesn't put me to sleep. I sleep because I feel safe and protected by you, my friend. That's what it's like. Like a baby. I just visited a friend, just had a new baby. And so I went over it because I'm a wizard, I had to go smell the baby. It's hard to explain, but I went over and I took a big, deep huff of that baby's head, and all that newborn energy went up into me. And I said, oh, I had forgotten the smell of beginning. I had forgotten the smell of potential. I have forgotten the smell of an unwritten future. I had forgotten that smell of purity and innocence. And I have it back in my heart. And I realize it's still in me and it's still in you. Oh, my fellow babies. My fellow innocents. My fellow soaring seabirds. My fellow shivering seabird chicks in a hole in the ground. Hoping that one day you will be able to soar before you are gone. Someday look out on that ocean and see the endless expanse and feel the feeling of awe and being overcome. Oh, it's good to be with you. It's not always, say, I was going to say it's good to be alive. Not always. Sometimes it's not good to be alive. It's hard. There's very hard things. And you say, Hardy, I don't experience that joy. I know. I don't doubt you. I'm not going to say the joy is there and you don't say. There are joyless lives and there's nothing you can do about it sometimes. Oh, the things that happen to people. That's why you help when you can help. You save when you can save. You work all the time. You reach out all the time. Reach out my hands. I reach out my hands right now and I say to you, oh, my friends, I don't know who you are. But I welcome you into my family. Come on to the island with me. This is your new home. Live with me. I'll live with you, and we will be islanders together.
And the history of the island will be whatever we want it to be. The history of the island will be the sum total of all the things we've done with our lives. And they will accumulate like the dead coral, and our descendants will live upon our memories. And they will live upon the things we did. So make sure those memories can serve as a foundation for the future. Make sure that we're not laying down a flimsy, I won't say foundation again, thingy on the bottom of a thing. Make sure it's sturdy and that it will hold the weight of the future. I'm so glad that you're with me all the time, but especially today, because I've seen recently birth and death. I've seen old people fade away. It's their time. I've been with old people who aren't gone yet, but it might be the last time I see them. I've seen family, some of them, for the last time. And during that last time, you have to do this thing where you forget that it is the last time. And you imagine that it is a timeless moment. And that you are all in an infinite space. And that nothing will ever change. And that everyone is just where you left them. But I recently had the experience of not seeing some people for 20-some years, 27, almost 30 years. And then to see them again at a different stage in their life. And although I time travel and should be used to seeing someone as a baby one day and an old man the same day, it still came as a terrible shock to me. Because in my time machine, I can back up and I can go see them again as a teenager or a young person. Zip back, see them as an old person. But they can't do that. They live their lives in one direction. And really, I can go back in time, but nothing new happens. Just have those same conversations we had before. So I try to be in each and every moment as if it is infinite, because that's the only infinity I have access to, is by prying open moments, crawling inside of them, and living in there as long as I can. No! Do you feel like you know the history of Bermuda now? Do you feel like you could go take a test? Do you feel like you get, at least you get the first question right? What is lava?
A type of soap used to remove motor oil from one's hands. For example, Hardy's grandfather.
Exactly. Exactly. And what comes out of real volcanoes?
Soap.
That's correct. And what kind of soap?
Lilac?
Try again.
Lavender.
Lavender. You knew it was an L.
Yes, lavender soap comes out of volcanoes.
Indeed it does. And then what happens?
And then soapy islands are created in the bathtub. See this floating bar of soap?
Yes.
That's an island.
Oh, I love taking a bath with you.
What?
You know what I mean. Come on. It's fun to play in the bathtub. I put on an old-timey bathing suit to do it, one that covers my whole body and my legs. But then we get in, we can play with the boats and everything. Say, look, I'm the sea venture bumping into Bermuda.
Woo, better get out of here. Onward to Jamestown.
But I'm so intrigued. Let us return to Bermuda. Perhaps we could build a luxury golf course there. I'm not much for golf. I'm not looking forward to the end of times, but if there is some sort of end times, and everybody's gone except me, I'm going to go out onto the golf course. I'm going to go out on the golf course, and all by myself, no golf clubs, nothing else, and I'm going to look up to the heavens, and I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, excuse me, may I play through? May I play through? And then I will walk along those beautiful green rolling hills. I will look at the sand traps and I will think of all in the family. Can you get there? How many steps? Bunker. You got there in 2 steps. Very good. Good for you. Good for you. I will think of that, and my mind will wander, and I'll let it wander. And suddenly, Rob Reiner and I will be walking on that golf course. Young Rob with the hippie mustache. And I'll say, isn't it lovely out here? And he'll say, yes. Do you golf? I'll say, no, I don't golf. He said, he'll say, neither do I. But look at this. Step onto the green with me. Look at that hole. Look at that flag. Rob, I'm getting a little bored. You want to go something to eat? Yeah, let's get something to eat. Man, I tell you, I thought it'd be more interesting just walking on the golf course without playing a game. I know, I did too. Let's go actually do something. I know what we'll do. Let's go fishing. No, I don't like to fish, but I don't want to kill anything. There used to be in Bermuda a tourist attraction called Devil's Hole. And what you did is there was like a big kind of a sinkhole with water in it. And in that water were big fish, giant fish. I don't know what kind they were. And sea turtles. And you would lower a rope with like squid attached to it. And you'd lower it down and just on top of the water. And the fish or the turtle would jump out and grab it. And for a while, you could act like you were fishing for it and pull it up a little bit. Pull it slightly out of the water before it took your bait and jumped down in again. And that was, they don't have that anymore because it's, I don't know, it's slightly horrifying, I guess. I don't know. I don't know if the creatures are harmed, but we don't want to be pulling them up out of the water like that for no reason. That's long gone, but let's do that kind of fishing where we're just basically feeding the creatures, right? I mean, we're making them entertain us while we're doing it, but I tell you what, afterwards we'll ask for forgiveness. That's the way I do it. Forgive me, sea turtle, and we will make offerings to them in the form of prayers. And also a little gift pack with rum and some cherry peppers and everything. They'll love that. That'll make up for any kind of any inadvertent cruelty. Oh, I can't believe you're with me. I really can't believe you're with me. I can't believe you're with me and would go on a vacation with me like that. You just went to Bermuda with me. Thank you. I want to go to yours. I hope I'm on your island. I hope we can share these experiences together. And at the end of the vacation, when we have to get on that plane or ship and go back home and go back out into that huge ocean, disappear again from one another's lives, at least maybe the memories will remain, maybe not with us, but we left them on the island for others to build on. So, I'm not sad that I might have to leave my memories here, because I think there'll be a foundation for something. My memories and your memories together will help an island rise out of the sea where creatures can have a respite, where they can live for a while, to be safe, to rest, to be tourists. Oh, my friend, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White, and this is WFMU, East Orange, WMFU, Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, and online worldwide at WFMU.org. That's how you are listening to this. Oh, my friends, I thank you so very, very much. Thank you for coming to Bermuda with me, and I will see you again next week.